term poetic justice is a literary construct used in storytelling. It's usually found at the end of a tale and is defined as the moment in the plot where virtue is ultimately rewarded and vice is punished. No matter how many strands of narrative constrain the characters, no matter how far and wide the story may roam, in the end, through some ironic twist of fate, everything turns out as it should. Cinderella becomes a princess, while her evil stepmother and sisters become servants. But one does not have to live life very long to begin to believe that most of the time, poetic justice is only found in fairy tales. Wrongs are seldom made right. Good does not always win in the end. Injustices go unpunished, and the virtuous are rarely praised. The real world is harsh and cruel in its plot, and can cause us to doubt that there is such a thing as justice. Yet justice is written across our conscience. When we see it trampled, there is something within the heart that screams, "No, this is wrong." This is the fingerprint of our Creator. God, the Creator, He is just. He is the very essence of justice. You see, although we may not see poetic justice played out across the stage of time, in the end, God will make every wrong right. Every man will receive that which his deeds demand at the final judgment. But there are some instances where the poetic justice that our hearts seek is not necessarily reserved for some far-off day standing before the throne of God. Some of them take place right before our eyes. Such was the case with the godly woman of Chipping Sodbury, England. I'm Ronnie Brown, and this is Forgotten. Chipping Sodbury is a small farming village in the southwest of England, founded in the late 12th century by William Croesus, the first Earl of Albemarle. By the 16th century, it, along with the whole of England, was thoroughly Catholic. It would not be until 1517 that Martin Luther would nail his 95 Theses to the church house door at Wittenberg, Germany. And even by then, the dawning rays of Reformation light would not reach England for years to come. But that does not mean there was no persecution of Christian orthodoxy by the Catholic Church at that time. Men like John Wycliffe and William Tyndale, morning stars of the Reformation, had already left their mark in England. The great martyr historian John Fox details the persecution and death of such men like William Tillsworth, Thomas Chase, Lawrence Guest, and John Brown, all in the early years of the 1500s. These men died for the sake of the gospel truth and their condemnation of the idolatry and superstition of the Catholic Church. Nestled in Fox's accounts is an obscure story of a nameless woman who was burned at the stake at the town of Chipping Sodbury around this same time during the late years of King Henry VII's reign. Although her name is not given, the account of this woman had a profound impact on the mind of John Fox, because he said, quote, "Of all the people who suffered for Christ and His truth, I know of none so admirable as the godly woman put to death at Chipping Sodbury," end quote. There is little known of this woman. Her name is not given. Fox only addresses her as simply, quote, "a godly woman," end quote. There's no clear statement of her charge. The only thing that can be found is that she was charged with heresy. Now, heresy could mean any number of things, from suspicion of witchcraft to differing beliefs concerning the sacraments. But when we combine her report of heresy with the description of her godly character, we can rest assured that her accusation is rooted in an unwavering devotion to the truth of God's word. Fox's account also sheds light on her tormentor, He is identified as a church counselor by the name of Dr. Whittington. When named in the context of church matters, a chancellor is a lawyer who represents the church in legal matters. Evidently, this Dr. Whittington mercilessly brought serious charges against this godly woman and insisted before Catholic church leaders that she not only be found guilty, but be condemned to death. As close as can be known, somewhere between the year of 1508 and 1511, this godly woman was brought before the people of Chipping Sodbury to be executed by being burnt at the stake. Now, there's very little doubt that much of the formality surrounding the execution is to elicit a recantation, to cause one to renounce their beliefs under the threat of death. No doubt she was presented before the people of the village, bound to the stake, and a flame kindled at her feet in hopes that she would recant. She could probably see Chancellor Whittington, who was in attendance at the execution, sneer with delight at watching her final moments. But this godly woman refused to allow her fears to cloud her conviction. She held firm to the truth of God's word and committed her dying breaths into the hands of her Lord. Before long, she breathed her last breath in this world, and the flames consumed her mortal shell. The deed being done, the townspeople that had gathered to witness the execution began to disperse to their homes in a quiet uneasiness. At this exact same moment, on the other side of the village was a butcher going through his daily business. He had to forgo his attendance at the town spectacle because he had a large bull slated for slaughter. As the execution flames further disfigured the lifeless form of this godly woman, the butcher finished securing the bull into position with ropes. Now, he had done this countless times. One sharp blow to the head of the bull should do the trick. The butcher raised his hand and came down with a decisive blow. But something happened, something that rarely ever happened. The butcher missed. He struck a glancing blow to the bull's face. In panic, the enormous bull lunged backwards with all of his might, at which the strained ropes that held the animal in place snapped. The suddenly freed bull bolted towards daylight and soon found himself on a city street. With all of his might, the bull began to run. Coming in the opposite direction were crowds of people walking back from the execution. One might think that this would be a disastrous situation, that this wildly frightened and injured bull would trample people by the dozens. But the most bizarre series of events took place. The direction the bull was running did not take him away from the commotion in the crowd. No, it took him straight toward it. And even though the bull ran violently toward the people, driving right through the midst of the crowd, not a single person was hit. That is until the bull arrived at the town center where the execution took place. The bull made a straight line toward one person, seemingly gaining speed, almost as if he were aiming for that one individual. And with one powerful thrust, the raging bull rammed his horn into the body of Chancellor Whittington. Eyewitnesses testified to the fact that the bull trotted away with the entrails of Dr. Whittington dangling from its horn. What took place that fateful day is indeed what we might call poetic justice. And although it doesn't happen often in full view of an onlooking world, it does imprint upon the mind of all who see the biblical truth of the prophet Hosea when he said, "They that sow to the wind shall reap the whirlwind." Or what the Apostle Paul wrote in the Galatian letter, "Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap." Either way, it just goes to show that if you mess with a bull, you get the horns. Forgotten is written and produced by me, Ronnie Brown. You can find out more about this show at ForgottenPodcast.com. I'm also on Facebook at Facebook.com/ForgottenPodcast. Forgotten is also available on various podcasting apps, such as iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Downcast. Be sure to stop into iTunes and leave a review. And as always, thanks for listening.